Fourth quarter of the program begins right now as we finish strong here on a Monday. Trent Green coming up right around the corner. We will talk to the quarterback of the Kansas, or the former quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Get his thoughts. Excuse me there. Sorry about that. A little loud. I bumped the button. Get his thoughts on how things went for your Kansas City Chiefs and how they'll go against the Buffalo Bills. Trent Green called the game with Kevin Harlan. So looking forward to talking to Trent Green. Of course, our need to know brought to you by our friends at Culligan. My buddy Bob can help you out the way he helped me and my family out. Culligan Water, 50 years giving Kansas City the best water around, the most experienced water treatment expert in the land. It's my man Bob. They have done a fantastic job at our house where we now have the reverse osmosis. Got a little button, didn't even have to carve into the counter. Nope, same faucet. We just press this little Bluetooth button. Boom, it switches the valve over, and we're getting bottled water, quality water right out of our tap that we've always had. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. Remember, right now you can receive up to $300 off the new line of water treatment solutions that are out there. So go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. Save up to $300 right now and get the best tasting, cleanest, best water around. CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. Let's start with the news being reported about the Chiefs front office. The Bears now have requested to interview Chiefs Executive Director of Player Personnel Ryan Poles for their vacant GM job. There are three teams with a GM vacancy, and all three of them have now asked to interview the 36-year-old Poles, Giants, Vikings, and Bears. All three asking to interview one Ryan Poles. So I think it's probably pretty difficult. Certainly going on what Adam Schefter said about the quantity of interviews with Eric Bieniemy. If all three jobs are asking about Poles, I would think that it's probably going to be a difficult stretch to think that he's not going to end up someplace else. You agree, Kay?
Yes. That's just too much interest. One of those teams is grabbing him. Giants and Vikings and Bears, oh my.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting to do that.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. Very impressive.
Not really.
Very impressive, really. Curtis. Andy Reid at the podium today talking about a number of things. One, the gadget plays were a big topic of discussion. Let's start with Andy Reid being asked, they had a fumble on the one, right? Andy Reid was asked what advantages they have when they play these unique formations like they did in that play that didn't end up going the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, so McColl's done that. He did it all through college and high school. He was a quarterback, and so we've worked him in there. We've repped the thing. It didn't work out. It could have been that Darryl wasn't practicing a whole lot. So I'll take that one. But we trust McColl doing that, and we've worked on that kind of stuff for a number of weeks.
You know, I'm fine with that, but don't trust him anymore because and I'll disagree. Like, I like the fun plays. I get it. I get the breaking up the monotony. I'll ask Trent Green about it. He's been through the doldrums of NFL practices. You know, I understand why he does it. I also get the idea that it creates something the other team hasn't seen and hopefully gives you a mismatch and ends up being productive. And to his credit, Andy Reid's like, hey, it didn't work. You know, and to their credit, they had more than enough firepower to overcome it. But I do think the flaw in this one is having McCole Hardman handling the ball. He's just not secure with the football when he's just running with it. Why would you think he'd be secure with the ball when you ask him to, you know, do something with it?
Yeah, and I also am not as big a fan of that play on that end of the field. I like that play at the other team's 20. I get that it could possibly result in seven either way. If you fumble it at the 20, you probably got enough chance to get it to get back down there. Maybe you get a stop, you get the ball around midfield. Doesn't really kill you. What's the best that could happen with that play at your own 20? You gain 15 yards? Aren't there safer ways to gain 15 yards with this offense? If you're at the 20, it might net you seven.
I don't know. I think when they work, they're great. When they don't, you're a moron. Period. It's 0 or 100 on those plays. I hear what you're saying, but I mean, you know, like to be like, oh, no, this is a touchdown play over here, but not over here. I mean, I get the extra distance you've got to run. It's either going to pop open or it's not.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't work. I think there is a flaw in having McCole Hardman handle the ball. He's just now kind of starting to get it as a wideout.
Mm-hmm.
Eh.
They'll give him something else to think about, yeah.
I still like Blake Bell on that play. I mean, he's more recently been a quarterback. I don't understand. I think that's the guy that a lot more could be done with when it comes to those kind of wildcat formations. It does result in a touchdown for the Pittsburgh Steelers, or did result in a touchdown for the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday. Herbie Teopia, the Kansas City Star, asked Andy Reid what his message was to the team after the Watt touchdown.
You know what, Herbie? I didn't have to say much. I mean, they knew. The players know better than anybody when there's a screw-up, so... but they bared down. Nobody was hanging their head. They just said, let's go and we need to amp it up here a little bit. And that's what they ended up doing.
Yep.
They zeroed in on Andy Reid, you know, kind of like, what the hell are you doing? I mean, I thought they really wanted to get his reaction. Good television, by the way, for NBC. You want to get the reaction. I mean, here's a play that most people wouldn't run at that point or run at all. He does it, and it blows up right in his face in a game that's not going their way, that they're supposed to be kicking Pittsburgh's ass, and instead they're now trailing 7-0. Right? Let's get a look at the guy who just called that one. And I thought the look on Andy Reid's face was – how would you describe the look on his face?
Ambivalent. I mean, it didn't seem like he reacted. Maybe I read it wrong, and that's the first thing I looked at. He looked like he looks most of the time when he's on the sideline to me.
See, I thought, and maybe I'm just reading something into it. I thought he looked like when he was answering questions about the fourth down. Yeah, about the Bengals end. Or I should say fourth mm-hmm. quarter, the end of the Bengals game. Yeah, no, they took a knee. They took a knee, like defiance is what I saw. Like because he usually is always right, and I don't think any of us react well to being wrong, and then especially to be wrong publicly. It sucks, right? It's why I think if you make definitive comments, like in my line of work, or you call plays in his line of work, I think you should quickly realize the right way to handle it is to just fall on your sword. Because trying to BS your way around it, doesn't he look a lot better? You know, now they won this game, and maybe that's why it empowered him to just be like, yeah, it didn't work. As opposed to the way he handled the end of the Bengals game?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It certainly helped. Were you meeting his facial expression with the question or on the sideline after the play happened?
On the sideline.
Okay. I want to make sure.
On the sideline after the play. I mean, I think he was frustrated as all hell. I think he loves those plays. He loves it when it works. And when it doesn't work, he knows he's going to be criticized. And I think we all have egos. And he doesn't like being criticized. And, you know, coaches spend a lot of their career getting criticized. Even, like we said today, they just kicked the crap out of, Randy Withers tweeted this, does a great job covering all the high school recruiting and high school football. You know, he tweeted out, Chiefs win 42-21, quarterback throws for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns, and these two calls just happened on Sports Talk Radio. You know, like the penalties, stupid penalties, he got on Vicky, he said stupid penalties, and then the DBs don't know how to cover. He said that just happened. And I agree. And so they're all unfairly criticized because they had a great win. And here we hear, a lot of people's reaction is to bitch about some of these other things.
Right.
And I think it drives him crazy. I think it drives all coaches crazy or many coaches. I think Dick Vermeil found his happy place. So whatever. I'm making a ton of cash and I got a Super Bowl ring. Listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think for Andy Reid, it's clear that I think he just was like, "Murr." You know, just my view. I might be totally wrong. He may have been, listen, one way or another, I'm going to wake this team up. We're either going to have some fun with a trick play, and hopefully that gets their juices flowing, or it's going to blow up, and they're going to score, and then it'll be hell or high water. You know? I don't know. Either way, Chiefs kicked ass after that, so there's nothing to complain about once it got going. Nope. The trick plays, though, did continue with Travis Kelce throwing the touchdown. I asked Andy Reid what advantage it gives his team when other teams have to prep for all these different kinds of formations and plays.
You know what, Saran, I guess it's twofold. Other teams have to prep for it, but we do these on an individual basis for that team. So in a lot of cases, the pass at Kelce was individual for that group. So we try to find whatever matchups or what we think we can take advantage of, I guess, lack of better terms, but and work on them. You know, and try to put a play in for that. So we trust our guys to do it, though they get a number of reps on it. EB does a good job with all that.
He did say it's twofold. He did say it is to put things on tape. But really, I mean, I think in essence, he thinks it's a way to try to score points, a way to be successful on offense. But, you know, the Kelce's a continuation. I mean, mm-hmm. This is the team. Pittsburgh's evolution the team that we can throw it on.
Yep.
Right? Like the other teams know. They do a good job. They stay home. But Pittsburgh will bite. You know, here we go. Or it's just he ran it out of that formation, and whoever the fourth or fifth team was that he was going to show it to was going to get the pass.
I like your first idea. Pittsburgh had been the hard rushing. They've been super reactive all night long, and I think he probably figured this is a play. They're going to move on this one, and we can get them.
Yeah, and get them they did.
Yep.
It worked really well. All right, the Kelce throw also had Patrick Mahomes. Now, after the game, Patrick Mahomes said, Kelce was not supposed to throw it to me. After the game, Kelce said, I wasn't supposed to throw it to anybody but Pringle. It was either Pringle or nobody. I asked Andy Reid if Patrick Mahomes acting like he was open was a decoy, or was he actually thinking, hey, maybe he comes my way with the ball?
Yeah, when you put it in Patrick's hands or Kelce's hands, you're never quite sure what's going to happen. So, he was told throw it to one guy. Patrick was doing that just to track somebody, I think.
Andy Reid had a big smile on his face.
Yes,
as he was saying that. I know what he was told, but, you know, I guarantee you, Patrick Mahomes being a competitor, in the back of his mind was, yeah, but if it all goes to hell and I'm wide open, I guarantee you, at some point, sitting on the plane, you know, walking around the hallways, you know, I know you're supposed to throw to Pringle, but if it's hosed and I'm wide open, man, you got to give it to me. I guarantee you, Patrick Mahomes, barring a career-ending injury, Patrick Mahomes will catch a touchdown. I guarantee it.
And I guarantee that Andy Reid is thinking about that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's throwing to one guy. We're not throwing out there. There's no way he's not considering the run it that way the next time, because subterfuge is not above. This team isn't above that in that regard. Maybe Andy Reid is saying this because he wants the next guy to think, I'm not throwing the ball to Mahomes. The next time it happens, boom, Patrick, open.
I think they love getting it to all the different players. And, of course, Nick Allegretti gets a touchdown as well. Adam Teicher asked Reid what he needs to see from a lineman before he trusts calling on him in a play like that.
Yeah, so on Fridays we do pat and go, and the linemen do their own little pat and go and kind of a breather from hitting the sled, I guess. You get an idea who can catch and who can't. So if you got a little bit of skill there, we'll try to work with you. And Allegretti, you know, he's got great hands. For a wrestler, he's got great hands. You know, nice job.
They basically have little drills where the offensive linemen catch the ball.
Yeah.
Right. That's what they do. He gets a look at it. Andy Reid sits there and watches it and gets a look at, you know, who can and can't catch the ball. It's something that's fun, like you said, to break up the monotony of hitting the sleds. But it's also something that he says, listen, it's a way for him to get a look at who can handle it and who can come back and get the ball. So, you know, I think it's one of the things that, you know, we're doing things to kind of break up the monotony, but we're also doing things to try to get a look. If we want to put in a trick play, then this is how we're going to do it.
And, of course,
go ahead.
And, of course, Nick Allegretti wears the same number that the greatest pass-catching offensive lineman ever wore, Joe Valerio, 73.
That's right. Joe Valerio, he knows what he's doing. Some other NFL news for you. The Raiders are continuing to interview. Ian Rappaport's reporting that Mike Mayock was informed that he won't be retained. So he is out. John Gruden resigned in October. Mayock now out in January. They have also requested permission to interview Patriots inside linebacker coach Gerard Mayo for their head coaching position and Pats player personnel director Dave Ziegler for the GM job. So a complete house cleaning, at least with the GM. Rich Bisaccia has not been told he's out. He did meet with the Raiders, so still a chance that he could find his way in there. But we will see, you know, where they end up going.
Interviewing for a head coach job when you haven't fired the guy you've got, it's a little strange, but maybe that's not that odd.
J.J. Watt activated for tonight's game. He'll be available for the Cardinals. Jimmy Garoppolo hit the injury report. He's got a, quote, slightly sprained throwing shoulder, in addition to Fred Warner and Nick Bosa, who are on the injury report for the 49ers. Tristan Wirfs, the tackle for the Buccaneers, is in a walking boot, but they're hopeful that he will still be able to play. We will take a break. When we come back, Trent Green, the quarterback, joins us. We talk football with Trent next here on the program. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we finish strong here on a Monday, breaking down this big Chiefs win over the Steelers. It was expected to be easy. Didn't look like it to start, but ended up being easy. I'm here to break it down with us, man who called the game for Westwood One, Trent Green, former Chiefs Pro Bowl quarterback, joins us here in the program. Trent, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Doing well. It's, you know, the excitement around Arrowhead was a lot of fun. I know, you know, Kevin and I were talking about it even before we went on air, just you know, coming into the booth, driving into the stadium, it's, you know, considering, you know, where we were a year ago and it was a limited number of fans, it was just great to see playoff football, the stadium packed, everybody, you know, everybody going crazy. Just a great atmosphere for a game.
Yeah, it was, and didn't start the way we thought it was going to. Why did the Chiefs need so much time to get going? What did the Steelers throw at them that had their offense struggling so much?
Well, it was, you know, just going back to like the start of the season, right? It was too many mistakes. I thought there were times that maybe they were trying to do too much stuff on offense. But then as things unfolded throughout the rest of the game, they continued to do those things, and those produced several of the touchdowns. So yeah, they just couldn't get into much of a rhythm, and the Steelers were doing a good job, but. You know, you look at those first five possessions, I want to say it was punt, tip pass, interception, then punt, then the fumble return for touchdown. And then it was all of a sudden like they woke up. It was like, okay, we got to get a different sense of urgency, a different tempo in and out of the huddle. And just, I don't know, to me it looked different. It looked like it was a shift, not only in the demeanor of Patrick Mahomes, but really everybody on offense. I thought the defense played really well right from the beginning. I thought they did a good job. Now, you know, the Steelers' offense has struggled most of the season, but that's not to take away from the Chiefs' defense and the way they came out prepared and really stifled the Steelers for that entire first half.
You know, I talked with Tim Benz from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review during the week a couple times, once on his show out there in Pittsburgh, and then he came on with us on Friday. And, you know, he had kind of mapped out, he said, the game plan for a Steelers win is to be +3 in the turnovers and to get a return touchdown. When that score happened, they were then +2 and had the return touchdown on the board. It was looking like the perfect formula was there. The other one that I had was I felt like the Steelers were going to have to run for more than 150 yards. And to your point about the defense, Najee Harris wasn't going anywhere. Not all day. Not when they threw it to him. Two catches for negative one yard, I guess, singular. It would be when it's negative and negative one. I mean, they just bottled him up. And to me, that was, while the offense, this is when you've got a championship team, isn't it, Trent? That when the offense, which is maybe your bread and butter, isn't clicking, your defense has got to step up. And that's exactly what the Chiefs defense did.
Well, they did. And I want to say the Steelers had 42 yards at halftime. I mean, that's unheard of. You know, I thought they did a tremendous job. I thought that's stopping the run. You know, that was one of my keys to the game going into it for the Chiefs was, you know, the Steelers, they wanted to run the football. You know, most of the throws, and we saw it throughout the course of the night, most of the throws that Ben Roethlisberger and that offense make, they're all quick. They did get a couple of throws up the field, which were later in the game when the Chiefs were still in man coverage, and they took advantage of some of it. But, you know, most of the stuff is quick, and they want to run the football, and that's really when their season turned around is when they focused more on the run. So I thought Steve Spagnuolo, the defense, had a tremendous game plan in terms of focusing in on stopping the run and you know, forcing it into a Ben Roethlisberger type of game. And then on top of that, you know, how many drops did Roethlisberger, you know, have his receivers, whether it was Deontay Johnson with drops, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster wasn't completely healthy. He was restricted, you know, with his arm mobility because of that shoulder surgery. So I thought he played well, but had a drop in one instance. There were multiple times that the ball hit the ground, and it was just I just thought the defense did a tremendous job.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, while the offense is finding its footing, the defense is keeping them in place. And then, man, when the offense did find its footing, and it almost was like, okay, we got a little too cute. Let's just go beat these guys. And let's start before we get to the beatdown part with the Mecole Hardman handling of the football. I don't know about your view, but around me when I'm watching a game, the people I watch the games with, there is a sense that, you know, they wish Mecole Hardman was playing touch football because there is a fear that he is going to fumble the ball every single time he has it. And, you know, that's not fair, but he's put it on the turf more than he really should. And just had times where it looks like he's about to fumble. To ask him, and he doesn't strike me as the most instinctual player. Incredibly fast, yes. Better than he's given credit for? Yeah, he is. People, I think, ding him unfairly because DK Metcalf was drafted a few picks after him. He's a fine player, productive, explosive, but the last guy on earth I want handling the football. I mean, you know, people think a handoff is just a handoff, Trent, but there's a certain way you got to do it, you know, so that the running back's not looking for the football, and it does take a little practice, doesn't it?
It does, and I'm sure they practiced that quite a few times. You know, the ball, when you look at the replay, was right on Williams. I mean, there really wasn't much of a chance to. I don't know if it was a read out. I don't know if he was reading the defensive end. I mean, that's a lot to ask for somebody that doesn't normally do that. My guess is it was just supposed to be a disguise, and it's either you hand it or you keep it. You don't want to put a guy in position that doesn't normally do that to where you're all of a sudden making him, you know, read linebackers or read defensive ends, depending on, you know, those kinds of things. So I can't imagine that's what the play design was supposed to be, but. I know why they do it. I mean, you think about it throughout the course of the game, you know, Kelsey with the touchdown pass, and, you know, they've had a number of times where they've moved Mahomes, you know, further back in the eye. They motion him out wide. They line him up out wide. It's really just to cause hesitation by the defense. That's why there are so many different designs. I mean, and think about the touchdown pass to Allegretti, I believe, where Tyreek went in motion like three different directions. It was basically just a back and forth, and then he zipped around behind the home. I mean, it was like there was all these different things going on, and it was just, all it is to cause some confusion or just a slight hesitation by the defense where you can gain leverage or gain an advantage. And that's really why all those different play designs. And I heard a lot of people after the game wondering why the Chiefs were showing some of those plays. Why not save some of those plays? Well, now that you've shown them, it all of a sudden makes the other team, and in this instance, it'll be the Buffalo Bills, it makes the other team prepare for all that stuff. Or it causes just that slight hesitation where, wait a second, this is the one where Kelsey's in the backfield, and okay, they've done these three things when Kelsey's in the backfield. And you know, they did this when Mecole was in the backfield. They've done this when Tyreek's in the backfield. They did, you know, pump fake this way, underhand to McKinnon. Okay, just any of that stuff that can get your mind racing instead of just point A to point B, speed, fast, that kind of thing, attack, which is what the Buffalo defense likes to do. Anything that can cause the slightest of hesitation can give you an advantage from an offensive standpoint. So I don't fault them for showing a lot of the stuff late in the game because I think that really is setting up what they want to do and what they're hoping to do against Buffalo, and that's just to get that defense to hold just a little bit.
A couple things, you know, that I think are of note. One, you mentioned, you know, Allegretti catching the ball. You know, the offensive linemen play catch when they're warming up at practice. I mean, that's one of the things that they do. And I suspect that Andy Reid's sitting there looking at him, watching who looks like a natural receiver, who looks like they can actually catch right. The ball. They do it just to goof around and have fun. But there's a method to the madness. I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen an Andy Reid team, you know, hit a lineman. We saw it with Eric Fisher, you know, catching a touchdown, and what they call it, they had a name even for that one, you know, Angry Fish Right or something. I can't remember something about, you know, catching a fish or something. You know, he does that. How important is the trick play to break up the monotony of practice? How important is it, you know, that, like, we can talk about it. Well, that could have cost him the game if it was against a better opponent. Agreed. I don't know that he runs it against a better opponent, right? But there is something to Andy Reid, you know, kind of breaking up the monotony and making practice fun, which if you're having fun, then I would think it's easier to concentrate. You know, you think that's a part of what it's all about with Andy?
I think first and foremost, it's about finding an advantage to go against the defense and to try and get points. So I think that is Andy's number one goal. Score as many points as I possibly can and try and be as creative as I possibly can to come up with ways. The second part of it, I think, falls under the category that you're talking about is getting guys involved, getting more people. Did you see the reaction of all the other linemen, of all the players jumping all over? I mean, it was just, that brings excitement. So not only are you doing it in practice, you know, but then you do it in the game and it actually works. The other part of it, and as I'm giving this answer, I'm thinking about it. The other part of it is the assistant coaches. So now all of a sudden, if you're an assistant coach and you've got an idea for a play, there shouldn't be any hesitation on your part because Andy's shown that he's willing. I mean, Dontari Poe
yeah.
threw a pass, threw a touchdown. I mean, they're willing to have defensive linemen, offensive linemen, you know, wide receivers, running back, tight end. I mean, whatever. You know, take the direct snap and do different things with the football. So I think it opens up the creativity of your offensive coaches as well to come up with something, you know, hey, we've seen this. And so I think there's several things there. And then I heard also that, you know, Andy is open to players coming to him with suggestions for ideas. And he doesn't always listen to it and sometimes they're a little bit crazy, but I think that adds a level of excitement and everybody feels like they're invested and they're in it. And listen, I got people are listening to my ideas. And, so number one, it's about scoring. Number two, I think it's about, you know, getting guys involved in the excitement level of it. But I think the creativity of it adds excitement as well because everybody feels a part of it.
Yeah, you know, definitely. And yeah, I feel better about Travis Kelce throwing the ball because he played quarterback. Right.
Like,
if you're going to run one, I know that he's actually thrown a pass before. And I love the explanation where, you know, Patrick Mahomes said, well, I know he was told, don't throw it to me. And then Travis Kelce said, I was told you throw it to Pringle or you don't throw it at all. Like, you know, to your point about, are you reading the end? Kelce wasn't given any reads. Pringle's open. You throw it to him. If he's not, you don't. And, you know,
yep.
and
keep it simple.
Yeah, keep it simple. And to your point, you know, about what they do with that, we've seen him in the backfield now, what, four or five times this year. Never had he thrown it. It was always a run play. And the last time they ran it, I don't remember if it was against the Bengals or who it was, but they were ready for it. Maybe it was the Broncos. And it got stuffed. And I was like, I guarantee you what's coming is a jump pass, right? Like, that's the next evolution. They keep showing him. Teams are hip to the fact that he's going to run. Now he's going to throw it once. And to me, now you turn around and they're looking for the pass because that's the most recent thing. And so now they'll get back to making a power running out of that formation.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, and you're right. You know, how many times we saw Travis, you know, out of that position, he fakes the handoff like it's an RPO and or just an option read based off the defensive end or the linebacker. But in reality, you know, that's him keeping the football. It's just a window dressing for the run play. And as you said, defenses were dialed in. And I thought the other cool play design to it is a lot of times when you do that, when you have someone else throw the football, similar to going back to Dontari Poe with the thing, a lot of it is, you know, to that tight end, that extra tight end leaking out and it's a jump pass right over the middle, that you see done. And, I thought it was good that they had, you know, Pringle working the back line, working that back part of the end zone. It was a different type of route. So everybody that sucks up, you look for that guy to leak out of the middle. But with Pringle working the back line, you know, and then to your point with Kelce having a background at playing quarterback earlier in his playing career, it makes it a little bit more flexibility there.
We've seen Blake Bell take the quarterback sneak from under center. He goes in motion, then he comes back in motion, gets under center, calls a quick count, and they sneak it forward. And we've seen that be successful. What I don't get is Travis Kelce was a quarterback in high school. Blake Bell was a quarterback in college. I don't understand why that package isn't for Blake Bell, who's used to running the ball, is 260 pounds, you know, ran over people in college. I would think that goal line package would have, like, I would have issued Blake Bell number 8, you know, which is now legal for tight ends,
right,
and let him line up at the quarterback on a regular, you know, that's our goal line package. If we're down inside the two, here we go. And he might run it. He might throw it. You know, he might power it in. I mean, to me, that's something that you could probably work a little better than, like, taking Travis Kelce out of, you know, the pass pattern.
Well, it almost seems like what you're asking for is what the Saints did, you know, with Taysom.
Yeah.
You know, Taysom Hill would come in when Drew Brees, you know, towards the end of his career, those last couple of seasons, there was a red zone package. There was a third and short package. There was a short yardage and goal line package, fourth down. I mean, it was, he had a group set of plays. And to your point with Blake Bell having recently played quarterback, not all that recently because he's been in the NFL for quite a few years, but just the fact that he has that background, that I guess the hard part about it or the negative part about it is, you know, I remember watching those games and it's like, wow, you're taking the ball out of Drew Brees' hands. You've got the NFL's all-time leading passing. You're taking out of his hands now, and it worked. And then there was lots of success that the Saints had with that package. So now you go back to it with Patrick Mahomes. Are you really going to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands? I mean, it's a league MVP and shattering records every time he takes the field. So I think that's where some of it comes into play. Is, you know, you just don't want to take the ball out of 15's hands because he makes something special happen, you know, almost every time he touches the ball.
No doubt. And, you know, but if you're not willing to present the threat of running him, why not just take him all the way off the field, you know, and have
I think the whole stadium like held their breath, right? When Patrick hurt his knee a couple years ago on a
sneak,
a very simple quarterback sneak. And then all of a sudden this game, he takes off running up the middle, and you see the four defenders, and he slides, and it appears that he gets the first down, but now you have to remember when you slide feet first is where the ball is. So a lot of times, you know, it's marked back, and it ended up being short of the first down marker. But I think people were fine with that as opposed to him diving and taking a hit like some knucklehead that's talking to you on the radio right now.
Getting down at the right time is an important part of the equation, right?
I look back on some of those decisions, and at the time I was like, you know what, I'm a football player. I'm going in there, and now I'm sitting here and I'm like, gosh, I probably would feel a lot better right now if I hadn't done that. But it was good to see Patrick be smart about it.
I remember I go back to his first preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons, and he had one where he tried to bulldoze his way in. And even then, I was like, no, like, I think you're going to be pretty good, kid. Don't be going around there doing that. Let somebody else. You got guys that are paid to run over people. Let them do it. You're paid to throw it over people. You know, keep that in mind. We're talking to Trent Green here in the program. I cooked up a stat since 1990 when the NFL expanded to the 12 teams in the playoffs. There had been 17 occasions where a team in the wild card round had scored 40 points. Two of them were lost. The 40 that they scored wasn't enough. Of course, we know the Chiefs in 13 lost to the Colts. And 45-44, I think the final was. And the actually a great shootout between Kurt Warner with the Cardinals and Aaron Rodgers with the Packers. 51-45, the Cardinals beat the Packers. So there were two teams that didn't advance. So the 15 teams that scored 40 and won, they're only 3-12 in the next round. I cooked that up on Saturday to calm the nerves of Chiefs fans that were freaking out because Buffalo looked so good against the Patriots. Then, of course, and one person on Twitter noted, well, I think this all might be irrelevant tomorrow when the Chiefs hang 40 on the Steelers. And lo and behold, they did. So that stat has now canceled itself out. But I think there is something to it. It's hard to hang 40 back-to-back times, right? Do we get two teams that come flat after both of them look so impressive in this wild card round?
I don't think so. I think when you look at what Buffalo has done and they've now won, I believe, five straight games. They finished off the regular season winning four or five. And then with the playoff, it's now five or six. It's they're playing really good football. Josh Allen's playing very confidently. He's got that dimension of running. You know, when you're 240, 250 pounds and you can run like that, you've got that size. You're speaking about quarterback sliding and being smart about it. That guy's lowering his shoulder and trying to make contact and run you over. It's a different dimension, different style of runner, you know, than Josh Allen is. And you know, listen, it's two hot offenses. I mean, the Buffalo scored all seven possessions. I'm not counting the eighth one where they took a knee, but they scored all seven possessions, touchdowns. And then the Chiefs had six consecutive, you know, touchdown drives of their own, you know, after a slow start. So, you've got two hot offenses coming in. You've got a really aggressive defense and a number one ranked defense in the Buffalo Bills. And they like to blitz and they like to bring pressure and they bring it from everywhere. And Steve Spagnuolo likes the blitz. He likes the pressure. He likes to bring it from everywhere. This has gotten the making to be a pretty incredible game. And when you consider the last two matchups, you know, you go back to the AFC Championship game a year ago and then the Week 5 game, it's going to be one of those high-flying games that's going to be a lot of fun and exciting.
Do the Chiefs have an advantage because they play the game in revenge, having lost the first time? I mean, they beat the Bills twice last year. The Bills will be trying to do that to them this year, or do you see an advantage for the Chiefs this time?
I think the Chiefs definitely have an advantage. I think it's, number one, they're playing on grass. The Bills are used to playing on turf, even though both play outside in cold weather and that kind of thing. So I think from a climate standpoint, I think Josh Allen has proven he's fine in dealing with that, the different types of climate. I do think it's an adjustment going on grass as opposed to turf, which, I mean, the guys play on grass all the time, so it's not that big of an adjustment, but I think there is an advantage there. I think, you know, from a personnel standpoint, in terms of who the Chiefs did not have the first time in the matchup, I think they're also doing a better job of protecting the football. I know they had a couple turnovers early in the game against the Steelers, but you go back to the beginning of the season when the Chiefs were really struggling. A lot of it was due to the turnovers. And in that game, Patrick Mahomes had a couple interceptions. He had a pick six thrown to Micah Hyde, and Buffalo didn't turn the ball over. I want to say Buffalo was +4 in the turnover margin that game. So it's that was the style of play that the Chiefs were playing in. And now they seem to be, you know, dialed in a lot better in terms of protecting the football. And the defense is definitely playing better. I know Buffalo's offense did really well that day in Week 5, and they've done really well since then. But I think it's just a much different Kansas City team that Buffalo will be facing this time.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're playing better ball. I think they present a lot more challenges to the Bills than certainly the Patriots did. And I think we saw, you know, we've got two of the better quarterbacks, right? The key for the Chiefs defense is going to be really to contain Josh Allen and his ability to run. But I think where the Bills, I think the Chiefs are a lot better now, but I think the Bills are better now because they've incorporated, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Singletary into that running game. And it's not just all on Josh Allen's arm and legs. You know, he can hand off and just watch a play be successful, which is something they really hadn't had until the very end of this year.
Well, and that's a great point, Saran, because we had the Bills a couple of weeks ago, Kevin and I did, and Singletary is a big part of that offense now, and having that added dimension has really been helpful. You know, getting Josh Allen, you know, take some of the pressure off of him to have to feel like he has to do it all on his own. The passing game's been going. I tell you what, who they are missing defensively, though, is Tre'Davious White, who was injured and is now on IR. I mean, he's one of the best corners in the league. And so missing him has made it a little more difficult on the defensive side, but they've got so many weapons on the defense, and the way they bring different pressures and the way they rotate their defensive linemen so that, you know, it's fresh. They want fresh bodies in there all the time. That'll be interesting. That's going to be, as I'm sitting here talking about this, that'll be interesting to see if there are different points in time that the Chiefs decide to go no huddle or go up tempo just to prevent the rotation of the different personnel groups that Buffalo likes to do, because I know they like to keep fresh bodies in there.
All right, last question I have for you is about the Dallas Cowboys and how that game ended. They're being just crushed for not getting the ball spiked and the play stopped. What's your opinion? Everybody now is saying, oh, it's, you got to have 16 seconds. They only had 14 seconds. Dak Prescott's got to slide earlier. You got to know after 10 yards, you got to go ahead and get down. The center needs to know to hold the ball out for the ref to come be able to spot it. That one I do buy, because I've been seeing guys, I think that's been the last 3, 4, 5 years, guys I've been aware of it. I see the center or even the guy who, you know, if it's a running back who's down or whatever, holding, looking for the official to hand them the ball. They clearly blew it on that. That's a matter of coaching. But there are people saying that Mike McCarthy should be fired because of how that game ended. What's your reaction to the firestorm that's come from that Cowboys ending?
Well, I just think that would be a knee-jerk reaction to fire a coach that wins the division based on 14 seconds. I mean, it just, could they have handled it better? Yes. Do you hand the ball to the official? I tell you what, every time I've ever seen a player, wide receiver, running back, whoever may be quarterback, anybody that goes up and spots the ball, the official is going to come up and pick that ball up look over at the official on the sideline and make sure it's in the right spot. He may put it right back down in the same exact spot, which if you look at the game, he actually picked the ball up, moved it one way, and then moved it back the other and pretty much was in the same exact spot. So they're just going to confirm. They're not going to trust the player to actually put it in the right spot. So that's time right there. Game management is always a big thing about it. You've got to know that going into the play. Listen, this is what we can do. How many times have you seen hey, I'm going to throw this slant to you, but do not try and make anybody miss. Catch the ball, get the slide, get down, we'll all run up to the ball. I mean, all those things are predetermined. So there was a lot of things that were mismanaged at the end of the game. There's so many things that happened throughout the course of that game. I mean, the number of penalties the Cowboys had, that was awful. You can go on and on about, different play selections and stuff throughout the course of the game. So to blame it on the refs, blame it on 14 seconds, blame it on, there was plenty of time to do other stuff and make better decisions along the way it's just funny. It's not funny. It's just interesting that's so dramatic, right? It's Dallas, right? It's this big dramatic thing. And it's like, Jerry Jones, are you going to fire Mike McCarthy because of the way he managed the last 14 seconds? Like, come on. I mean, they won the division. I mean, and it wasn't the strongest division in the world, but he won the division. And he had a whole playoff game. And yes, things happen. And you're facing the San Francisco team. I thought San Francisco was going to win that game. And there was a lot of people that thought San Francisco had a really good chance of winning that game because of the problems they presented for the Cowboys. So, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction because, number one, it is the Cowboys, and there's so much attention placed there. But no, Mike McCarthy should not be fired.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I mean, yeah, there are mistakes that are made, but he got in there. And by the way, I think had they finished off that comeback, the story would have been, how do the 49ers give him 10-yard chunks just like candy all the way down the field? There was plenty of mistakes being made over on the other side as well. Let's get to our Final Four with Trent Green, CBS Sports, our football insider. We talk to him every Monday. Our Final Four is brought to you by University of Kansas Health System. If you have an orthopedic or sports injury, see the experts who care for the Chiefs. Get more information at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I'll start you with this. Maybe you're hearing some rumblings. Are we going to play the Super Bowl in L.A. or Dallas?
I've heard it back and forth. I think LA is going to do everything they can to keep it there. So I'm going to say LA. I know there's been a lot of, different mandates or they may limit capacity, all those kinds of things. I just think because of, it comes down to money in the NFL. So I just think because it's as big as what it is, I think LA, if they're going to do anything, they're going to make sure that Super Bowl is played. I could be wrong because California does a lot of strange things when it comes to the rest of the country. So they may shock us and it end up down in Dallas. But I'm to answer the question, I'm going to say they'll stay in L.A.
Okay. Give me a prediction for tonight. Who do you think wins, Rams or Cardinals?
I'm going with the Rams. Matthew Stafford hasn't played that great down the stretch. I think 8 touchdowns, 8 interceptions over the last 4 games. They found some ways to win. I believe in that defense, and I believe that they've got too many weapons offensively. Stafford is the one. He's been too inconsistent this year. At points in time, I would say Matthew Stafford was the MVP of the season. And then there's other points in time where I was like, really? He missed some wide open throws and stuff that you would think that he would easily make. So I'm going to go with the Rams.
Okay. Chiefs, Bills. Who you got winning that one?
I just think the Chiefs. I think the fact that they have them at home, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be – it could end up being a high-scoring shootout. I just think that playing at home, Patrick Mahomes is outstanding. The team plays really well. Mahomes is 7-2 in the playoffs, and his only 2 losses are to Brady, 1 in New England and 1 in Tampa Bay. I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
Do you have a score?
I not right now. No, I think it's going to be a lot of points. It could be, both teams in the 30s. It could be one in the 40s, one in the 30s. Even though Buffalo has the number 1 total defense and their great scoring defense and all those things, I think there's going to be a lot of points.
Yeah, I hope so. It sounds like the kind of game people will love to watch. All right, finally, what are you feeling for the Super Bowl now? We've got some of the teams eliminated, all updated each week. Who are you feeling? Who beats who in the Super Bowl?
Well, I'm still, I don't know how many weeks in a row, but I'm gonna go with Kansas City and Green Bay. I just think that would be such a special matchup, because the Super Bowl won, because of, you know, Rodgers and Mahomes, there's a lot of great storylines there. So I'm going to stick with that matchup.
Yep. He's officially in the media, folks, because he's rooting for storylines. That's when you know it's official. The playing days are behind him. He's thinking about the storylines. I love it. Trent, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's funny, Trent. Hey, I appreciate it. It's great talking to you again, and we'll talk next week.
You are the man. You are the man. Trent Green with us here in the program. Always on a Monday. Always great to talk to Trent from CBS Sports Westwood One. He's the best in the business. We'll take a break, come back, finish things up with the kicker.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. TJ, JJ, and Derek Watt, the second trio of brothers to have scored an NFL touchdown. What is the other trio?
I don't know. I tried to think of this. Couldn't come up with it.
Marcus, Isaiah, and Desmond Trufant.
Ah, wow. Doing it from the defensive side as well with that. Holy cow, the Trufants. Great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. JazzKitchen.com. You want to find them online, see their great menu made from scratch. Live music with the best Cajun food around. You can't find a better combination in Independence, out at the Legends, and, of course, the original at 39th and State Line. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Leave you with this for the kicker. Today is Martin Luther King Day. Curtis, you brought up the fact how young he was when he was killed.
39 years old.
Yeah. Would be 93 today, right? Like 93. Yeah. And there are people, you know, that are 93, many people that are 93. Yeah. We thought we'd leave you with some of our favorite quotes from Martin Luther King, celebrate and honor what he did for our country. We may have all come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now. Man, that's one we could all get our arms around.
That's terrific.
That's fantastic. We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. I think that one's great. You know, let you know, hey, it's not all going to go your way, but you got to always be, you know, looking to the future and hoping for the best. Forgiveness is not an occasional act. It's a permanent attitude. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.
That's number one for me.
That's absolutely fantastic. Listen, I would encourage you to spend some time going and reading about Martin Luther King today and reading some of his great quotes. They are absolutely amazing. We certainly enjoyed looking up some of his quotes just to bring you that, and we'll do more of it tonight. I know Curtis will. I will as well. And remember the man and the greatness that he brought to this country. Just absolutely fantastic. I think, Curtis, you put it best. What did they say about him and his quotations?
There are no B-sides.
There are no B-sides, the only hits. It's amazing. We certainly remember and appreciate the sacrifice and all that Martin Luther King did for this country. We hope you will take a couple of minutes to remember that as well. Let's see if we can all just live a little bit better life starting right now, right? Starting right now. We're back at it tomorrow at 2:00.